Today's Mr. Media Interviews podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Why Audible? Because I use it myself. Let me give you an example. Lots of people probably bought the hardcover edition of Bruce Springsteen's new memoir, Born to Run. That's great. Keep reading alive. But wouldn't that book be even more fun if Bruce read it to you himself? Give a listen to Born to Run as read by the author.
Walls and ceiling. Then I drift to sleep. Tucked inside the greatest and saddest sanctuary I have ever known, my grandparents' house. I live here with my sister, Virginia, 1 year younger, my parents, Adele and Douglas Springsteen, my grandparents, Fred and Alice, and my dog, Saddle. We live literally in the bosom of the Catholic Church, with the priest's rectory, the nuns' convent, the St. Rose of Lima Church and Grammar School, all just a football's toss away across the field of wild grass. Though he towers above us, here God is surrounded by man. Crazy men, to be exact.
It's pretty spectacular, right? Especially when you get to the E Street Band's origin story, as told to you by Bruce himself. That's you and Bruce alone in your head for 18 hours and 16 minutes. I've been to some long Bruce shows in my life, but nothing that lasted almost a full day. Now, right now, as a listener of Mr. Media Interviews, you can get a free audiobook download, and maybe you'll choose Bruce Springsteen's memoir, Born to Run, and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/mrmedia. That's Mr. Media. Let me repeat it. audibletrial.com/mrmedia. And look, when you finish Born to Run, you'll find more than 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Hi, this is Rich Scheidner. And if you've ever wondered what it was like to be a stand-up comedian in the 1980s, I'm going to do you a big favor. Instead of billions of dollars for a time machine, you can just spend $24.95 and buy my new book, Kicking Through the Ashes, My Life as a Stand-Up in the 1980s Comedy Boom. It will save you money and give you thrills. It will take you there. Go to my website, richscheidner.com. Go to amazon.com and buy this book.
Hi, this is Kate Moretti, author of The Vanishing Year, and you're watching Mr. Media.
I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You can see, hear, and read more than 1,000 of my previous celebrity interviews at mrmedia.com. That's mrmedia.com. Subscribe to the show on YouTube, iTunes, Apple News, Google Play, or Stitcher, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. On today's show, I'll talk to novelist Kate Moretti, author of Binds That Tie, While You Were Gone, and I Thought I Knew You. Her latest work is the psychological thriller, The Vanishing Year. Stick around. Zoe Whitaker is not who anyone thinks she is. She may not even be who she thinks she is. And identity issues aside, there seems to be something sinister in not just her past, but in her present. The danger in her past seems to be creeping into her present, but is it related or something new? Kate Moretti's latest novel, The Vanishing Year, is a page-turner in which the reader quickly gets caught up in both the luxury of the heroine's life and something frightening that appears to be lurking around every corner. If you're looking for a suspenseful, woman-in-danger story, you'll want to take a ride with Moretti on her latest. And then, like me, you'll find yourself reaching for her previous bestsellers, including Binds That Tie, Thought I Knew You, and While You Were Gone. Kate Moretti, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Glad to have you. And I'm going to point out right from the beginning that you are Kate Moretti. You are not Anne Rice. You did not insist on doing this in the dark. It's just kind of moody, and we're doing it in the evening, and you've escaped from your children and your husband, and you're just kind of hanging out.
Right. My attic office is where I write.
Should have told you to, you know, bring a glass of wine or something. I'm sorry. I'm going to start encouraging that for future evening interviews.
It's a good idea.
So I got to ask you, when a book or when I watch a movie as compelling as yours, as your book, I almost feel a little guilty. And I wonder, is it wrong to be riveted by a story of a woman in danger?
No, I don't think so. I think that I don't think it's wrong. I'm always riveted by crime stories in general. In fact, most of my favorite books have somehow involved a crime or a criminal act, or and I love the Woman in Peril story. I love when a woman in peril story, and she saves herself. So I think that that's always really interesting. And there's been this big boom of female writers writing sort of what they're calling domestic suspense now. And it's these average women who are faced with extraordinary circumstances. And I think that really speaks to a lot of people, because it's sort of, you know, taking things that are the headlines and bringing them home. And bringing them right to your front door. And, you know, what would you do in this situation? And you can sort of envision that. And I think there is something inherently riveting about that.
Yeah, it's funny you said that, because I want to give this book to my wife when I'm done. Because I've told you, I have not read quite to the end, because I don't want to give it away for anybody. But it did seem like something like that my wife, or a lot of women I know, I think would find very interesting. And you know, it's reaching a point where Zoe, your heroine, is kind of taking charge, and she's realizing that she hasn't really taken charge of her life to this point. She did to a degree, but then she relinquished control again, and she seems like that's where she's heading.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that she's had a lot happen to her in her past, and a lot she was responsible for, and I think when you go through a lot of tragedy, and then followed by a lot of bad decisions and mistakes, it's very easy then to say, you know what, I'm not doing a really good job of driving this bus, so I'm going to let someone else be in charge for a while. But, you know, you can't really do that in real life. That will always come back for you at some point. You have to own your own. You have to own your own life, you know.
So. Do you think that's a largely female thing, or do you think that's crosses the sexes?
I don't know. I know a lot of men who are in careers that they don't love and, you know, trudge to the office every day. And so I don't know that it's necessarily a female thing. I think being trapped in a life you don't feel like you chose is a human thing. I do think that at some point people get tired of it. And I think, you know, that's where a lot of midlife crises come along. So you have to say, wait a minute, things are not going the way I wanted them to go. I don't think that the average person has faced the amount of tragedy and bad decision-making that Zoe has faced. I think that if anybody really tried to write a book about the bad decision-making of the average person, you'd end up with a really boring book.
You think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe everybody's life is a lot more interesting than mine.
Oh, well, all right. I wasn't judging your life.
So, I mean, I think, you know, most people go to an office or they go to a job that they might not love. And so that's not Zoe's problem. Zoe's problem is more related to her terrible decisions and tragic past. And it's much more dramatic.
Questionable lineage.
Yes, questionable lineage. Like, there's a whole kitchen sink of stuff that's happened to her.
At the point at which I stopped reading the book, and I can't actually say what it is because it gives something away, but I went, holy crap. So I'll let you figure out. You know about how far I am. You can guess exactly what just happened.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know the thing. It's, yeah. I've had mixed reviews. Some people are saying, oh, I saw that coming, and other people say, oh, my God.
I didn't see that coming.
I'm never the kind of person that tries to guess a book. Like, when I read, I'm always just reading. I love to read. And so I don't try to outsmart the writer, you know. So I'm always surprised when people say, oh, I knew that was going to happen. I just think, really? How'd you know? Because I never know. I never know. And even when I try to guess, which isn't very often, I'm usually wrong.
And did you plot it this way? Or is – I mean, some novelists, they plot everything out before they sit down and write. Some, they have the character, they start writing, and they go wherever the character takes them. Are you in one school or the other?
I think it depends on the book that I'm writing. So for Vanishing, the end was what came to me first. The end was the germ of the idea. So usually the germ of the idea comes from somewhere, and how much of the plot that I know going in depends on where the idea came from. So for Vanishing, because I knew the end, and because the end is where this where it was sort of the seed. I plotted most of it before I wrote. And I was working towards a very specific thing. Now for my next book, see, I don't, in my head, and this is something I've always thought of, but I don't know that anyone else thinks of it this way. You have books that are destination books and then books that are sort of journey books. So for me, some of my books have been more about the thing that happens at the end that sort of ties it all together. And that's where we're going the whole time. And Thought I Knew You was like that, and Vanishing was like that, and Binds That Tie, and my next novel, which is The Blackbird Season. They're more like journey books. I was much more interested in the things that happened in the middle than I was necessarily in the end. And I was much more, for me, writing it, the seed of the idea was more of a concept than this twisty ending. So, for Binds That Tie, my concept was, what if a married couple accidentally killed a person? And then instead of calling the police, they buried the body. And I thought, wonder what that would do to them, to their marriage, to each other. Like, at what point do you start saying, like, I need to preserve myself. And maybe that means throwing my husband under the bus, you know? So I thought there has to be that point in everyone, no matter how strong or weak your relationship is, that point has to come at some point where it's, you know, where is that self-preservation tipping point?
So if you throw your husband under the bus, that would be the second murder, right?
Yeah.
Sorry.
But so for me, Binds and The Blackbird Season, which is the novel that will come after Vanishing, were more about the destination. They were more about the concept and exploring something that I found interesting. But Vanishing, and so those books, I had a lot more fun with plotting. Like, I could fly a little bit, seat of my pants. With Vanishing, I knew where I was going the whole time. So it was a lot more structured. And I knew a lot of it going in.
So this is the first of your books that I've read. I now want to read more of your books, which is a good sign. I wondered, though, have any characters recurred, or will they recur as you go forward?
I don't know. So I wrote Thought I Knew You. I wrote it in 2010, but it was published in 2012. And people really seemed to like it, and it ended up on the New York Times bestseller list for 1 week.
hey,
I'll take it.
Absolutely.
And it still sells, you know, really well, and I still get, you know, feedback on it in reviews, and people will bring it to my. In fact, I had my launch party for Vanishing, and a couple people showed up with the Thought I Knew You. I said, "Really, this old thing?" No, I'm just kidding. But these people still seem to like it. So, and then I wrote Binds, which was a little more of a suspense, which is kind of where my heart is. Thought I Knew You is a women's fiction. It's about a woman whose husband goes on a business trip and never comes home. And she doesn't know what happened to him. So she has to readjust her whole life, and she has two little kids. And it's not autobiographical, even though I do have two little kids.
Was her husband listening to too much Springsteen, you know, took a wrong turn, kept on going?
Very hard to take that much Springsteen. So then I wrote Binds, and then I had a couple people say to me, I really want to know what happens after in Thought I Knew You. And I said, well, I don't know what happens. And then somehow that seed got planted, and I thought, I don't think I could do a whole novel about it, but I thought I could do a novella. So While You Were Gone is a novella, and it's not a sequel. It doesn't pick up where Thought I Knew You left off, but it's sort of like a companion. It's happening at the same time, so it's a little bit confusing. It's what's going on. It's the other side of the story. So you should read Thought I Knew You first before you read While You Were Gone. But it's the only time I've used recurring characters. And I don't know if I will again. I think it was just something that a couple of people said, and it sort of wormed its way into my brain, and I thought it sounded like a good idea.
Well, sometimes you read a book and there's characters, and you go, wow, I want to know what happens to them next. And,
yeah.
You know, sometimes the author agrees, and sometimes they don't. They just want to...
With Binds, that the end is sort of, people get mad at it. They don't like it. It ends sort of on this like unknown kind of note. And people say, well, there's going to be almost all of the reviews now at this point say she's clearly setting up for a sequel. And I'm not.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Those characters feel very done to me. Like the way they ended, I thought was sort of perfect, and they feel done. Right now, Zoe feels done to me, but I don't know because I liked her a lot, so I could go back.
Okay. I was thinking. I mean, we just met. I cannot profess to know you any more than the 15 or 20 minutes we've been talking. But you seem to be a young woman who's got her stuff together. You seem. But what I'm saying is, you don't seem like you have any relation to Zoe Whittaker whatsoever.
Oh, no.
You just know that, are you past that point? Do you think in writing that your characters have to draw anything from you that you can, do from whole cloth, so to speak?
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm super boring as a person. So, I got one character out of me, and that was Claire Barnes in Thought I Knew You. And she's me. And because I didn't know how to write characters, I definitely didn't know how to write a main character. So I wrote Claire to be pretty much me and what I thought I would do in that situation, or maybe what I thought the decisions I might make, or maybe how I would react in anger. So I get a lot of reviews that talk about how terrible and selfish and awful she is, and I think, ouch. I'm kind of a nice person. I don't know. And because I did make her very selfish, kind of on purpose. Like but she was the only character that I got that really has any sort of resemblance to me, mostly because I'm a very normal person. So, writing about very average people, it doesn't make great storytelling.
True.
So
do you know Zoe? No.
She's a mess in the beginning. I mean, she's a mess, yeah. So no. I don't know anyone that has their life upended that much.
at the very least, you're going for plausible deniability here, because you don't want to admit you know a Zoe.
I will never tell.
And she's certainly not named Zoe.
No, she's not. Well, no, she's not. I wouldn't do that.
And do you, by the way, I'm going to interrupt for just a second. You may want to just drift slightly to your left.
Oh, there am I go. Too far to the right now?
You're perfect. You're perfect okay. There. Do you ever have to do any research for a novel?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? I mean, like for this book. Now, there's a reference early on in the book to Zoe's husband, Henry, always wanting to solve her issues with a different pill, another sedative of some kind, or that. And then I didn't read anything about you until after I've been reading the book, and I see that you're in the pharmaceutical industry, and I couldn't tell if that was a pitch for the pharmaceutical industry or a little satire of the pharmaceutical industry.
It was kind of neither.
Okay.
The pharmaceutical company that I work for is Johnson & Johnson, and the area that I work in is biologics, so they make drugs derived from biologic material. So it's nothing you can take over the counter. Yeah. It's all injected or infusions. So they make Remicade for Crohn's disease and rheumatoid arthritis. And they're immunologic drugs. They're for people with pretty debilitating illnesses. And so but there's no pills. Like I work in a large molecule lab. So, I had to do a lot of research on that, actually, because I don't actually take anything except for the occasional Advil. So,
kids.
So I had to do a lot of research into the different drugs that treat anxiety and depression. And, some of it was, looking up stuff online, and some of it was, asking around to people I know that take it, because it's very common. And, what are the side effects? And then I have a couple of friends of mine who are like physicians. And so I was able to say, now, which one would completely incapacitate you? Not that I'm planning anything. So that's always a fun conversation to have. But yeah, I do research all the time. I mean, I don't write historical, so I don't do that kind of research, but you still have to know what you're doing, you know, especially I live right about an hour outside of New York City, and I know New York City reasonably well, but I don't know it as well as someone who lives there. So I thought, well, there is a very big difference between visiting the city and living in the city. And I had to make sure I got, you know, all of these little things right. Well, you can't make a left on Charles Street because that's a one way, stuff like that. You know, I had to make sure I got all those details right. And so I did a lot of I did some research trips into the city, which was really fun.
I bet.
So I've walked the whole Vanishing Year tour. I have it mapped on my Google Maps. And I walked through the Flower District, which is so beautiful, at like 6 o'clock in the morning when Zoe walks down that street, you know, and it was amazing. And then I walked down in Tribeca, and Henry's building was based off the American Thread Company. So you're not allowed in that building, you know, and they don't really care if you say, well, I'm a novelist and I'm writing a book for there. Okay. But I just went and I stood on the outside and I looked around and, you know, I got a good idea of the neighborhood and the people that live there. And so most of my research is very fun. For Vanishing, I spent a day in a flower shop. They were a boutique, not an event florist, but the woman, it was at the time was called the Posey Peddler in Easton, and it's out of business, unfortunately. But the woman was amazing, and she went through what an event florist does and what their days look like. She was very knowledgeable. Yeah. So some of that I put into the book. So anything that I'm doing, I'm usually researching, mostly because I only do one job, and I can't make all of my characters have my job.
So I picked up you work for Johnson & Johnson, J&J.
Yep.
Do you work for them out of my hometown, North Brunswick or New Brunswick?
No. I work in Malvern, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
They are based out of New Brunswick.
Yes, they are. Originally out of North Brunswick, and then they outgrew us. So, yeah. I can still picture their plant there on US 1. Anyway. So, all right. So that covers the... that part. I did wonder, because I saw that you lived in Pennsylvania, small town in Pennsylvania. You're about 30, 40, 50 miles north of Philadelphia, I'm guessing?
Yes. My drive to work is about 68 miles long.
Wow.
Okay. One way.
All right. So I wondered if you had to, you know, do a little research to get everything right in the city if you weren't living there. And obviously you have a family and a job. So.
Yes. So, yeah, so for New York, I definitely had to, I did. I drove in, and I'd driven into the city quite a bit. So I knew it fairly well going into writing the book, and I thought, well, this would be a challenge to set a book in New York City when I don't live there.
Not to mention just driving into the city.
Yeah. I was better at that and braver at driving in New York when I was in college. Mm. Now I have a lot more to lose. And, you know, the expenses on my car are mine, so
yeah.
I tend to park outside the city and take the train in.
Very good decision-making. See, that's what an adult does. It's not what a college student does.
No.
Because I've done that. No, you don't do that. So I wanted to go back to your day job for just a second. So is it right to describe you as a scientist, or how do we...
I used to be.
Okay.
When the writing sort of took off and I realized that I really loved it, I went to my management and I said, I don't know that I want to do this anymore. And, you know, I can't juggle two jobs and spend any time with my kids. And I don't know that I'm fit to be the career track corporate person you want me to be. And they were a little sad, but then they were extremely flexible and understanding, and I pared back my schedule to, well, what I did was I identified a need in my department of technical writing, and I said, I will just fill gaps for you. And they thought that was great, and I said, you know, so now I work 3 days a week, and usually at least one of those days is from home. And so I don't have a full-time job anymore. I have a part-time job, which is fantastic. And I get to spend the other two mornings writing. And in the afternoons, I always put my kids on the bus. I get them off the bus many of the days. And it's working out. It's a much better life-work balance.
That's really nice. I was thinking, I don't know if you watch The Big Bang Theory, but you sound a little bit like Bernadette, where she's at. Where you were is where she's at right now in her life. She's just she's a scientist. She's, I don't know why I think that she works actually with biologics. I don't know why that sounds familiar to me, but she's pregnant, and she's starting to think, are they going to cut off my career path because I'm going to have a kid? And then I'm thinking she's probably going to rethink it. So I was just curious, you know.
I always found J&J to be very accommodating with work-life balance. I had two babies while I was there, and they were. I didn't feel like I was chopped off at the knees. You know, nobody said, "Well, your career is over." I was not on any type of fast-moving track. I didn't want to be. I never wanted to be like president or something of any division. You know, I wasn't trying to do anything like that. So I think maybe if I had been in some big career track, it'd be different. But I was in a lab, and I was happy there, and I knew what I was doing, and, you know, I was a more senior person in the group, so it was a very nice little niche. But with the writing and then the family, it was all too much, so I had to cut it all back. And again, they were really, I will never say anything. I love J&J. I think they're a great company to work for.
When did you know you wanted to be a writer, and how far along were you in your life in science and J&J when it hit you, or had you always wanted to be a writer? What, you know, where's the intersection point?
I said that I discovered a passion I didn't know I had at 35, which is the most inconvenient time of your life to discover that. I mean, we have a mortgage, my kids are babies. I basically said, like, I want to be in a garage band because that's the percent of success, you know, like, and that's what I just felt like I kept promising. And my husband is extremely understanding, but I just kept saying, you know, I really think I can do this. And I could hear it in my head, like, we're going to get a record contract any day. And I said, I know it sounds crazy. But I wrote Thought I Knew You when I was home on maternity leave. And it sort of was a story that came to me, and I wrote the first draft, and the draft was kind of terrible. But the writing itself and the story just was effortless. But the reason that was is because I didn't know what I was doing, and it was also terrible. So it's since gone through the ringer and editing and all kinds of things, and now it's a much better story. But, you know, I say you can't ever get that first book back. So anybody out there writing your first book, oh my God, enjoy every minute of it. It's like when everybody says, oh, that first baby, just enjoy every minute of it. But your first book is the same thing. You don't even know, you know, and I now everything I have all these craft books. I didn't have craft books when I wrote my first book. And I'm always thinking, what is the overreaching arch and theme of this book? I didn't think about any of that stuff when I first wrote, you know. Later, I had to go back and rework it all in because it's all important to storytelling. But now I know a lot, so it hangs you up on the first draft and it's not as much fun. But anyway, so I wrote that and then I sent it to a small publisher and they accepted it. It went through editing and everything like that. And then the second book I wrote, and I, this is fun. I love this. And that's when I sort of said to my husband, I think I'm going to be a writer. And he said, okay, well, you know, we share the mortgage, so I don't know. Like, if I was a stay-at-home mom and we had built our life around that, he would be like, go you. But, you know, he didn't. He said, well, that's nice, but you're going to have to figure out how to do this on nights and weekends with, you know. And he said, and then when it became more of a serious thing, we toyed around with the idea of, like, do we drastically change our life, you know, to allow me to do this full-time? And I said, but I love the company I work for. So this was a very nice middle ground, this part-time thing. And people say, well, do you think you'll ever do writing full-time? And I said, I can't imagine walking away from J&J because they've been really good to me. And so when I first found writing, I wasn't sure where it was going to go or whether it was going to be a hobby, something I did it, you know, when I couldn't sleep. But I think it was one of those things that I pursued slowly over the course of about 4 years. Just at every time I hit the next thing, I would just say, okay, what's the next step? And then I would get there. It wasn't anything that I didn't throw up my hands and quit my job and run out and do it all at once. You know, that wasn't how I did it.
Were there any particular writers that influenced your style or direction?
Oh, God, all of them. I have to be careful who I read and what I read when I'm writing, because I will just morph into them, you know. And I really, reading is my first love. I go to these cons, these conferences. I just went to VoucherCon. I went to Thriller Fest in July. And I'm just so excited to see all of these people that I've read forever that I forget that I'm kind of one of them. Like, you know, I mean, I'm not equal to them, because some of them are, you know, when you look at like Lee Childs and Michael Connelly, I'm not them, but you know, I'm starting out them, and but to me that doesn't matter. I don't care. Like, I'm just you know, I wait in these long lines to get signatures, and I just love you. So yes, for me, I have to be careful when I'm writing, because I will always be influenced by what I'm reading. So usually when I'm drafting very hard and I'm doing like 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 words a day, I can't read anything, because I'll just change. It'll change my whole voice.
Sure, of course. Well, just for anybody interested, Michael Connelly's been on Mr. Media. You can find his interview in the archives. And I'm actually reading my first Lee Childs book. I picked it up on vacation.
Really, your first one?
Yeah, it's my first one. I know. It's Jack Reacher, and I haven't seen the movies, but it actually looked pretty good. Much as I'm not a big Tom Cruise fan, it just looked good. And I was in a bookstore in Vancouver. I needed something to read. I saw it, and I went, "Oh, what the hell?"
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Yeah. Do you read Harlan Coben? He's one of my favorites.
Good.
Yeah. He's like a thriller guy, you know. Really great. Really great plots.
Sometimes part of the way I find new people to pick up is through the show. I talk to people about, you know, who they read and why they read them. So
I could talk about books all day.
Well, welcome to the show. All right. So you mentioned the title, the Blackberry Season? Blackbird Season?
The Blackbird Season.
Blackbird Season. Okay. So two books in a row that'll start with the.
Yeah, so Blackbird Season didn't have a "the," and they changed it and they put the "the" on it. And I don't care. I think it's, you know, because they wanted the covers to sort of be branded and kind of look like each other. And so I was happy. I'm happy with that. We haven't fully released the cover for the Blackbird Season. But as you can tell from the interview, I'm not used to saying the, so I keep moving it up.
Well, that's why I wanted to just check and make sure.
Oh, yeah, they both have "the."
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can find Kate Moretti's latest novel, The Vanishing Year, as well as her earlier works in great stores everywhere, or you can order them right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching the video at MrMedia.com, you probably know this, but to the left or right underneath the video, like over there or over there, you'll see the cover of the Vanishing Year and some of the other titles. Just click on them, take it to Amazon. You can order it. If you order it as a digital book, as on Kindle, you can have it in seconds. If you want a physical book, hey, you know, depending on where you live, Amazon can get it to you via drone in about 30 minutes or less. You can get a book faster than you get a pizza from these people. So you know, think about it. So click on the book cover, order it there. Kate, website, Twitter, Facebook, can people find you online?
Oh, sure. KateMoretti.com. On Twitter, I'm at KateMoretti1. If you tweet at Kate Moretti, it's some other woman, so it's not me. And on Facebook, it's / Kate Moretti Writer.
Okay. Great. And Kate or Katie, what do your friends call you?
Well, it's been both my whole life, and just to make even more everything more complicated, my given name is Catherine. So
of course, yeah, sure.
I've been Kate. I've been Katie. My mom calls me Kay. So I go by either, but okay. Kate Moretti felt like a nice author name.
It is a great author name. I wish my name was Kate Moretti, because you know, it's It just looks smoother than on the cover than Bob Andelman does. But you know, we're stuck with what we're stuck with. Kate Moretti, it's been a pleasure to meet you, and I'm enjoying reading your book. As soon as we're done, I'm going to go finish the book. Now that I didn't give anything away, and thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Media, today.
All right, thank you for having me.
Is recorded live before a studio audience full of women who are in the midst of Kate Moretti's latest book and, while fearful for Zoe, can't bear to put it down, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
I know, I feel like I'm like a vampire lady or something. It's so dark, and it looks a little green for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, the light sometimes throws off kind of a green tint.